News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. What a week it's been. Oh, my goodness. You got Dr. Nicole Sapphire standing by. Bill McGurn, the Wall Street Journal, is also standing by. We have a current president of the United States meeting with all leaders over in Southeast Asia, meeting with China's officials in South Korea, Japan. He's having an impact, but he's got no power. We got a new president-elect in Mar-a-Lago talking for the first time about his win. That's going to be interesting. So we'll follow all the – we had seven appointments yesterday, seven. Wonder how many we're going to get today from the incoming administration. Let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. Democrats, oftentimes when we lose elections, we think that we lost people to Trump. And that is true in circumstances, but they don't look enough at the fact that we also lost people to the couch.
You could say that. Some people stayed home. But for the most part, you had people that didn't want to hear your message, AOC. Honesty. That's what we're getting from some Dems that they begin to wrap their heads around their historic thumping at the hands of Donald Trump. We hear from them in their own words.
Number two.
Pretty sure I called him a clown and a charlatan.
You stand by that?
Yeah.
Mike Lawler, New York, Republican. Nominations flooding the news zone. And critics, skeptics, and analysts weigh in on his latest non-traditional selections from RFK to Gates to Tulsi. Dems scramble to keep up.
Number one.
But the American people have just delivered really something very amazing. The biggest political victory in 129 years. That's something. So we swept all swing states. We won the popular vote. Oh, I love that.
Yep, Donald Trump, obviously happy, one of the great moments of his life. Trump reflects, reacts, and basks in the glory of his remarkable victory, and is historic, as he hosts a major gala at Mar-a-Lago while getting yet another legend to come out of the shadows and talk about his support for the 45th and now 47th president of the United States. So everyone's talking about Matt Gaetz. Some people were surprised by Pete Hegseth, but RFK Jr. was going to get something in the administration, maybe some type of health czar, probably something maybe in the health area, because that's his area of expertise that he really wants to develop, make America healthy again. But he is head of HHS, and it's Health and Human Services Secretary, and that's going to be his nomination. And he controls the biggest bureaucracy in the government. And there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of oversight from a lot of different divisions. And he's going to be scrutinized heavily by people that were once his allies, and that's the Democratic Party. I'll go over his resume and what he wants to do. He's done a lot with the environment. He has a lot of expertise focusing on heart disease, cancer, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, asthma. This is what he's been talking about, the chronic diseases and what we eat and how it leads up to that. With us right now is Dr. Nicole Sapphire, Dr. Sapphire, you've been talking about getting America healthy again for a while.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Happy to be on. Yeah, you know, I am so pleased to hear that finally our chronic illness epidemic is finally taking a forefront and people are starting to pay attention. And rather than the traditional, you know, put a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, you know, method, we're actually talking about how are we going to actually make things healthier around here and start preventing illness instead of just treating it with costly treatments.
Well, that's interesting. Do you think that RFK Jr. is the best person to deal with that?
Look, I'm not going to say who's the best person to run the HHS. The reality is they oversee 11 organizations, trillions upon trillions of dollars worth of budgets. But I don't think RFK Jr. being nominated for this role is outlandish, as some people would like to think it is. If you start looking at the immediate past HHS secretaries, he actually is more in line with the values of what the HHS secretary should be. The current HHS secretary, Javier Becerra, he was an attorney, former attorney general, and nowhere did I hear about him talking about the overall health of America or chronic illness. And if you look at under the first Trump administration, he had Alex Azar, who was a pharmaceutical executive, and he was actually a lobbyist. That's the exact opposite of RFK Jr. And then if you even go to the Obama administration, Sylvia Burwell, also not a physician, not in the medical industry, but an administrator of a nonprofit organization. So when you're looking at who's right to run the HHS, I'm really looking for someone who has knowledge in the medical sense. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to be a physician, someone who can be extremely educated on the medical industry, but also someone who has taken a leadership role and who can manage certain things, including budget issues and oversee things. And I think RFK Jr., you know, I would have probably preferred to see him more in an advisory role. I didn't necessarily see him in this administrative position. I think there are also a lot of other people who could have been qualified. But again, I don't think it is, you know, so crazy as some of the other people who are criticizing him, you know, may say it is. I actually think it fits quite well with what the role is. And the reality is the same people who are criticizing RFK Jr. and that pick for HHS secretary are the reason why RFK Jr. has been appointed this role, because they helped develop the concern that comes with public health. All of a sudden, people are no longer trusting public health. They're no longer trusting their physicians and the whole medical industry. And so we need to get back on track so people can realize that overall we are there to help. And unfortunately, COVID really upended that for us.
All right. So a couple of things just to give an idea what he wants to do. He wants to talk about eliminating artificial food dyes, seed oils. He wants to end the FDA scrutiny on things like raw milk and supplements, encourage people to use more functional medicine and make alternative health care mainstream. He wants to lobby against fluoride in the water system, get rid of vaccine mandates. Here's what he said that is the truth about how he feels about vaccines. He brought this up earlier. And here's what he, trying to get the right one. Here's what he said about, first off, here's what Sanjay Gupta says about him. Cut 23.
Well, you know, it's not often that the entire medical and public health community is going to be in lockstep on something, but they're pretty close on this in terms of their significant concerns, horror even. Somebody said to me today, I can't think of any single individual who'd be more damaging to public health than RFK.
So that's how he feels. Do you hear a lot of people say the same thing?
You know, I understand what Sanjay Gupta is saying in the sense that in a time where we already have a lot of hesitation when it comes to our public health, to bring someone in like RFK Jr., who has been historically controversial, that's probably going to widen the divide. And looking forward, I think a lot of us are really wanting to, you know, bring some unity and really try to get people back to trusting public health. So I understand that concern. But I also know that Sanjay Gupta himself, as well as myself and Dr. Siegel and Eshwat, we can speak until we're blue in the face about living healthier lifestyles, you know, getting rid of ultra-processed foods and just trying to be healthier. But unless we have some federal and state-level support to remove the harmful chemicals, to remove some of these things from our shelves, you know, it's not going to work, especially for lower income families. And that's where we're seeing the largest amount of chronic illness. All you have to do is look at any other country and they're living healthier lives because their government is not allowing unhealthy foods in their market. Unfortunately, our government has continued to allow this, and it's not new. It has gone on for a long time. And so we do need someone who's going to look at these agencies and do what they can to make sure that these foods get off of our shelves and make sure that there's access to healthier foods for those that cannot afford it.
So because they always say that the best thing you could do is go shop at a farmer's market. Well, everything's more expensive there.
Yeah, absolutely. Farmers markets are so expensive. And in my 2020 book, also titled Make America Healthy Again, I talk about that. I say it's wonderful that some people can go to the organic markets, or they can grow their own food, or they can do all of these things to make themselves and their families healthy again. But the majority of people who are dealing with chronic illness, the lower middle class and the lower income families, they do not have access to affordable, healthy foods. And that is where we need it to happen on a federal level. again, I think RFK Jr. would have been amazing in an advisory role. We'll see how it shakes up with him being in this administrative role. I think the overall message is wonderful, and I support everything about the Make America Healthy Again movement, especially because he has come out and said he is in no way, shape, or form supporting getting rid of vaccines, which have been largely responsible for eradicating a lot of devastating viruses and illnesses. But he wants to make sure that they are safe and that people have access to information. Unfortunately, the COVID pandemic has really upended our entire medical community.
Dr. Sapphire, our guest. Dr. Sapphire, here's exactly what he said about vaccines. Cut 18.
I do believe that autism does come from vaccines. But I think most of the things that people believe about my opinions about vaccines are wrong. All I've said about vaccines, we should have good science. We should have the same kind of testing, placebo-controlled trials that we have for every other medication. Vaccines are exempt from pre-licensing placebo-controlled trials, so that there's no way that anybody can tell the risk profile of those products or even the relative benefits of those products before they're mandated. And we should have that kind of testing.
So what do you think about that? I mean, do you think it's been debunked that autism and vaccines are linked?
So first of all, we have seen the benefit of vaccines, specifically where they are with measles, mumps, rubella, polio, because what were once widespread illnesses have been wholly eradicated in certain areas because of vaccines. So we know that there's a benefit of the vaccines. Now, what is the risk profile of vaccines? That's something that's less talked about. And unfortunately, in academia and the medical community, if there is a clear benefit to a large population, they don't like us to necessarily talk about certain risks. And we saw that with COVID. We saw that there was a certain benefit with the vaccines. But when, I started talking about the fact that I didn't see necessarily the benefit with children, and I found that the risk profile in children and young adults for the vaccines, may outweigh the potential benefit, that's when I started being heavily scrutinized. So the reality is we need to have freedom of speech when it comes to academics, and we do need to make sure that we are not looking past, the individual potential risk when we're looking at the benefits of the society. So again, there is some controversy there, which is why I think that I'm a little concerned that this pick may cause a little bit more of a divide in the medical and health space. But again, his overall message is good in the sense that he wants to make sure that anything that we are recommending to adults, to children, has a very strong safety profile before it is recommended. And it certainly should not ever be mandated.
So I know the crazy, we all saw it with the pandemic. It used to be just experts like you who do this every day would feel the blowback and ire when you try to buck the system. I know parents that walked in recently and said, hey, I'm not too certain I want the vaccine, and doctors blister them. So I understand this blowback a little bit, but is it true that for vaccines to be effective, we all have to take them or else it doesn't work?
Yeah, so there's an individual benefit and then there is the community benefit. And really, when we talk about vaccine campaigns, we're looking at the communal benefit. And what the individual benefit of certain vaccines are, if your body has now elicited an immune response to this vaccine, when you are exposed in the future, if you are, then your body recognizes it and has an easier time fighting off that illness. So it decreases the risk of severe disease, hospitalization, doesn't necessarily reduce, say that you're not ever going to be infected by it. We see that with the flu shot every single year. But for us to actually decrease the prevalence of that virus or illness in our community, we need the majority of the population to have some level of immunity. Because the more people that are infected with something, the more chances that the virus or the bacteria has to mutate. And once it mutates, then it evades our immune system. And it is this vicious cycle of us trying to chase our tail, trying to keep our communities healthy from these mutated viruses.
All right.
So again, we saw that with COVID. We had a new variant, felt like every single day.
Right. So we'll see. There's going to be huge pushback within that bureaucracy. You know that for sure. But I think if he can make it public and talk about his journey. The other thing is, Dr. Sapphire, if he can't back up his beliefs during the nomination process, he shouldn't get the job. So let's see when he is pressed by people like Dr. Cassidy, who's a senator, does he have the answers? And if it is, if he knows just catchphrases and certain headlines, it's not going to work. You need to fully understand this stuff in order to implement it. And I think he does have the answers, but we'll have to see. Nicole Sapphire, the original author of Let's Make America Healthy Again. Thanks so much for setting the record straight. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Have a great weekend. So when we come back, your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Bill McGurn, The Wall Street Journal, the bottom of the hour, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
What happened to the threat of democracy talk? What happened to the fascist talk? By the way, I know I've said those things about Trump as well, but I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about his political opponents like President Biden. When they say it, it holds way more weight than me. I'm just trying to figure out how do you go from he's an existential threat to democracy. So welcome back.
100%. And that's what I tried to tell Charlemagne a few months ago when he had his book out, and I hope to catch up with him next week. Is that he said, you know, you told me he was a fascist, you told me he was Hitler, and then all of a sudden, hey, welcome back to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And I was trying to say, so he's a convicted criminal. I'm going, Charlemagne, did you look at this case? Did you look at this case, this Frankenstein case that was hemmed together in order to try only him? And the reason why he got so much momentum in May is because he got convicted. And when Biden started trolling him, his numbers went down. If you notice, Kamala Harris didn't bring up any of the trials. Why? Because their numbers, every time they brought it up, it fueled Trump. All the lawfare, and this is what I hope. Two things I hope. Not because they're good people, it's because it's not practical. No more trying your political opponents. No one trying to wear them out economically by putting them, suing them civilly and drumming up some person from the past that has outrageous claims about a would-be candidate with the E. Jean Carroll case that the President Trump says they couldn't even name the year. Having said that, and the border, not only do American people want the border done, but you think that by going, the thought was if you go easy on the border talk, it makes the Hispanic community more welcoming to you as a party. And now we find out that Donald Trump got more Hispanic votes than anyone dating back to the 1980s. And we have more Hispanic people here today. Why? He talked tough on the border. Why? Because the Hispanic people don't just focus on the border, number one. They came here legally. Number two is therefore hard work, therefore not paying high taxes, therefore high value, family first attitudes. It's not Hispanic. And David Brooks had this real good column today. And I'll get to it shortly, but I want to get at least one call in. Scott, listening in the Villages. Hey, Scott.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So, you know, about that lawfare, you know, I hope Adam Gates gets confirmed. I think he's perfect. He's a fighter. But more importantly, that apparently Trump has that $100 million lawsuit against the DOJ. And so I'm curious on who's responsible for deciding if that they settle that or not. Thanks, Bryce.
Great question. The other thing would be Matt Gates. Yeah, not many people feel that way. I know the president feels like you do. Over in the Villages, but not many others do. Jerry in Milwaukee. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, it would be great, Brian, if there was hearings on Kennedy and his views and other nominees. But Donald Trump doesn't want hearings. Even with the Republican Senate incoming 53 members, he wants recess appointments. So he doesn't want the American people to know about his picks. So
Jerry,
I
feel a little bit different about that. I think it's a negotiating tool because he only had one person sworn in when he took office January 20th. They delayed it. Delay. And what Tom Cotton just told me last hour on Fox and Friends, they're going to try to get him 9 hearings ready to go, ready to sign by January 20th.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We are in the presence of a really mythical character. I love mythology. And this individual does not exist on this planet. Nobody in the world could have pulled off what he pulled off. So I'm in awe. And I'll just say this, and I mean it. When George Washington defended his country, he had no idea that he was going to change the world. Because without him, you can imagine what the world would look like. Guess what? We got the second George Washington. Congratulations!
Well, that is Sylvester Stallone, who showed up at Mar-a-Lago and said what we all knew, that he was big-time supporter of Trump. A big conservative guy, really concerned about the direction of Hollywood, his country, the lack of common sense. He was out there front and center. As Donald Trump would come up later and say, look, I'm so lucky, two great boxing movies, John Voight's in the stands and Sylvester Stallone introduces me. He knew that John Voight starred in The Champ and Stallone, obviously, in five, six, seven Rocky movies. Probably turns out to be a good boxer. Actually, he was managing boxers for a little while. But Trump's having a great time. It's the first time that we've had a chance to hear him talk about the election victory that was so comprehensive. Bill McGurn's been writing about it, Fox News contributor, member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and writes the weekly Main Street column on Tuesdays. Bill, welcome back. Your thoughts about this election win? You write that it's not quite Reagan-type route, but this was impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's not – Reagan won every state except Minnesota and the District of Columbia. So it was, that was really an overwhelming route. But I think Trump's – you can argue is bigger or stung to get Democrats more because he made inroads into constituencies they regard as theirs. And he did so after making, you know, arguably the greatest comeback in American history. So I think it's a more stunning victory, even if it's not quite as overwhelming as some landslides before.
Yeah, I no doubt about it. Here he is last night, cut two.
But the American people have just delivered really something very, very amazing. The biggest political victory in 129 years. Can you believe that, Newt? 120. They said the most consequential election. I love that word. It's a beautiful word. Most consequential election in the last 129 years. Wow, that's something. So we swept all swing states. We won the popular vote. Oh, I love that.
And he did. And he said he gained in 49 states. Didn't win 49, but gained in 49 states. And with ethnicities across the board. Bill, the only people he lost with a little bit, 0.1, 0.2, is white people. So what do you take away from this?
Well, I wrote a column this week saying in 1984, when Reagan trounced Mondale so convincingly, you know, winning every state except Minnesota, some of the Democrats, led by Al Fromm, founded the Democratic Leadership Council to moderate its positions. And they did, and they had Bill Clinton was his chairman. And he won on a more moderate campaign, and they moved the Democratic Party. Today, I think it's a lot harder for them because it's not a matter of tweaking tax policy or dabbling with Ukraine, fiddling around with it. I think so many of the most unpopular Democratic positions are religious positions. And by that, I mean a religion gives you worldview, something to make sense of it. And so if you look at climate and you look at Earth as an Eden that's being despoiled by mankind, you get certain kind of policies. And I think that's why their policies tend to radical over the sensible. And it's a lot harder to give up a religious view than an economic view or something.
So I noticed that David Brooks wrote that Democrats are just missed it because they keep on trying to label people as Hispanic and black and white and gay and oppressed and the Republicans just came out with common sense and treated people the way they want to be treated about their economic situation and things that matter. Not everything is about gay rights, trans rights, civil rights. People are getting on with their lives, not depending. No one says, oh, it's easier for there was no Jim Crow and there was no slavery, but we're moved on. How can you help me today? Don't tell me what a bad country I have. Here's Richie Torres. Listen to this. He's making a lot of sense. A Democrat from New York, cut 35.
But when you zoom in, there is cause for concern, right? Not only did Donald Trump crack the blue wall in the industrial Midwest, but he's beginning to crack the blue wall, the ultimate blue wall, in urban America. He came within 5 points of winning New Jersey. He came within 12 points of winning New York. One in three New Yorkers in New York City voted for Donald Trump. In 2012, Barack Obama won 96% of the vote in the South Bronx. In 2024, Donald Trump won nearly 30%, a more than 20-point swing. And so we no longer live in a world where the Latino vote can be taken for granted.
That's not an analyst. That's a sitting Democrat in New York City. And he's black.
The sensible people know this. Look at Seth Malton, congressman from, I think, Massachusetts. He made a comment just, I have two daughters. I don't want them running up against a male in sports. And he was crucified for it. Some of his own ex-staff. I mean, they can no longer say the sensible for fear of being canceled within their own party. I don't see that, you know, changing without a big fight.
So evidently, Tufts got so upset with that. Tufts College was so upset with that comment that they said they will no longer provide interns for Seth Moulton's or provide resources or anything for Seth Moulton's staff. I mean, that's how backwater Tufts is. I mean, they're way out to the left.
It's a good example because one of the things Donald Trump did successfully is campaign on it. Like, rather than focus on the transgender issue in the abstract, he focused on men playing girls' sports. And, you know, my daughter was a collegiate all-star for rugby. She was captain of the Notre Dame women's rugby team and MVP for the Big Ten. And so she's not a delicate little flower. She plays rugby, liked it a lot. I would never let her play if there were men in the sport because she got hurt with women, like her collarbone stuff. Never let her play with men because they're just so much stronger. And people see, like they saw the Olympic boxer get smashed in the face and were asked to say, this is normal, this is fine. And people just don't buy it.
How about this, Bill? That woman who got hit so hard, said, I've never been hit so hard like this. Her dream was shattered. She had to go apologize the next day because it insulted the trans boxer. So,
right.
And we're done with that. I mean, done with it.
They're hostage to a religious view, or in other words, a worldview that forces them to do these things. And I think that's why it's so hard for them to reform, because I don't think they're in the mood to disavow some of the worldview that holds these positions. Look, even in economics, they have a largely religious view that divides the world into Manichaean good and evil. And so when you have inflation, they don't think it's a matter of policy or that the federal government is spending money it doesn't have. No, the reason for inflation is price gouging. Evil business people are price gouging innocent consumers. I mean, it's absurd.
I mean, that's why I laugh when people say Bernie Sanders is speaking the truth. He says the same thing all the time, always.
Right.
It's only he just added Democrats to his list, billionaires with tax breaks for billionaires. And enough about tax breaks for billionaires. The corporate tax rates make us more competitive globally. It's not to give Jamie Dimon more money. So they just thought we were simpletons. Also, I think we got to get a back test to glorifying success. Hey, what about Billy down the block? Well, Billy became the CEO of a major corporation, started his own business. We should be happy about that. We should be citing that more. We got to talk about that entrepreneur spirit. The other thing is, when you talk in extremes, so one, you know, Trump does it, but not like he was not called Hitler. He was not calling Biden Hitler. Hitler, fascist, democracy ends. We'll never have another election again. And then we find out that, hey, welcome back, Donald. Good to see you. And their one-hour meeting turns into a two-hour meeting. I hope people understand what rhetoric is, and they don't believe what they're saying when they say somebody's Hitler. Thankfully, that's he's one of a kind.
Yeah, I was very glad to see the meeting at the White House. As someone that has worked in the White House, there are a lot of gestures that kind of falls like people don't believe it in their hearts, but you force them to go through it anyway because it's good for the general atmosphere. I think of like after a game or after a fight, a teacher breaks up a fight in the schoolyard, kids going at it and they hate each other, right? And they make them shake hands, right? And you know they don't really feel the friendship that comes from the gesture. But the gesture is important. It pushes them in the right direction. So I'm glad to see that. But as you point out, you know, Joe Biden promising a smooth transition. Do you promise a smooth transition to fascism?
Yes.
It shows he really didn't believe it. It was just say something that sounds really bad, but they don't really believe it, because if they did, it behaved differently. You know, I'm glad they don't believe it, but I mean, that was certainly proof. Like, okay, the election's over. Now we will help your smooth transition to Hitler. I mean, it's absurd. And you pointed out with the corporate tax rates, like, remember before, the issue was all these companies moving their headquarters overseas because of corporate rates. What happened? We cut the corporate rates to make our economy more competitive, more attractive for people wanting to invest and grow companies here. And we stopped losing jobs because of the inversion. Same thing doing now. And yet the other side, you know, they talk about favors for billionaires and all this. We always have, since Reagan, the complaint is billionaires have to pay their fair share. I've never once heard someone who says that say, what is the fair share? Is it 30%? Is it 15%? Is it 75%? What they really mean is it's always more.
Right.
That's what fair share means, always more. And there's no economic justification. It's just, again, it's theology.
So Javier Malu, is it Malu? Excuse me. Javier Milei, the president of Argentina, he's a big Trumper, and he's a big fan, and he's already transforming that country. He's the first leader to visit with Trump face-to-face. Here's what he said last night at Mar-a-Lago, cut eight.
This has been the greatest political comeback in history, defying the entire political establishment, even at the risk of his own life. The political caste has established an oppressive state that divides citizens into winners and losers. On one side, those who pay taxes, and on the other, those who live off them. There is a silent, or rather silenced, majority that has begun to make itself heard, despite the enemies of freedom clinging to power through propaganda, distortion, and censorship. And this is why I would especially like to thank the great Elon Musk for the wonderful job he has been doing to save humanity through communication around
with Twitter and buying Twitter. So your thoughts about this, for people who think, oh, we're going to have this crazy guy as president and everyone thinks we're nuts. That's really not the case. I think less now than ever, you get these people like Macron that just don't feel he's worthy. But you have more people like a Milei.
Right. The test will be whether Donald Trump produces results. I mean, people want results on the border, for example, and we have a Republican Congress. They need to pass legislation to reform the border policies and solve the problem. Same thing in the economy. Trump has made a lot of promises on tax breaks and stuff, and there's going to be a lot of jostling when it comes to paying for them. So I'm not sure he could do all of them, but he has to get the system. I think it points to a flat tax, a fair tax, pushing it down. And I think he has to do work on that to get the economy humming again, because people are not feeling the great achievements that Joe Biden and Democrats were telling us about Biden economics. Those are two main things. And he has the world. You know, he's got Iran causing mischief all over the Middle East. He's got China threatening Taiwan. And the big wild card is Ukraine. I'm not as anti-aid to Ukraine as President Trump is. I think he has room to negotiate. The question is, if Vladimir Putin says no to the deal that Trump thinks will be a good one, what does he do? And I can see him getting very tough. After all, the first time around when he was president, he gave lethal aid to Ukraine when President Obama would not. So I don't think he can underestimate him. But I think the world is really at a fragile moment. Like, anything could explode into something. And I think good to have someone strong in the White House.
Bill McGurn, thanks so much. Can't wait to read your next column, The Wall Street Journal. Appreciate it, Bill.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. We'll take some calls when we come back. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But it's time for me to leave the platform.
Kissing goodbye my 1.9 million followers over there is because I hadn't been posting for a long time. I just didn't want to contribute content once it was purchased by its present owner. I just realized that it's not really worth it.
Really? It's not really worth it. That's a shame. So Joy Reid and Don Lemon are leaving Twitter. Good luck. I mean, I do fear for Elon Musk. One of the things happens is if people look at Tesla as a Trump vehicle, they'll look at SpaceX like a Trump operation, but no one cares about that. That's not really commercial yet. And now they're going to look at Twitter and say, well, that's X and that's Elon Musk. But why would you leave millions of followers behind? That's your way of communicating. Good luck building up on another platform. So, and also, I think they're straightening it out. You have a lot of advertisers coming back there, so it's going to be hot again. And you know him. He's already doing all the live stuff there, and they're bringing in more video elements to it, and they're bringing this community option there. So Don Lemon and Joy Reid are going somewhere else with their communication. So Don Lemon, as far as I know, has no show. And for Joy Reid, her ratings have fallen off a cliff, and now she wants to become even less visible? That's an interesting approach to all this. Don't you think? So I put it this way. Twitter is somebody that's going to treat you normal. They're not going to shadow ban you. They're not going to amplify you without any type of payment. So good luck with that. So to me, I'd want to stay on Twitter and find out what everybody's thinking, and they probably will. I looked at their comeback. Just like all these celebrities that say they're leaving the country if Donald Trump wins or George Bush wins, they never leave. Although Eva Longoria said she went to Spain. Quick note, especially for OKV listeners, I want to see you February 15th. I know it seems like a lifetime away, but it's coming around the corner right after the inauguration, right after the Super Bowl. I want to see you on Saturday night, February 15th in Jacksonville, the Florida Theater, for History, Liberty, and Laughs. Be on stage with my buddies, bringing history to life. We need it. Patriotic, motivational, inspirational night. BrianKilmeade.com in Jacksonville. Go get tickets there.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here, everyone. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Last night, I had to stay up a little bit late, watch a great series that we have on Fox Nation called Saints, put by Martin Scorsese, put it together, and then he talked about it afterwards. Pretty amazing. And you don't have to be a biblical scholar to appreciate the stories are almost true to the words in which they wrote. One was around World War I, so you actually had video of the saint. And another one was Joan of Arc, and you have her writings. So you really have something as true to form. And if you're looking to get your Bible, looking to get a biblical story on this holiday season without reading the Bible, this is a great way to do it. So it's a great series. Drops on Sunday. You would love it. Martin Scorsese's there. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. Democrats, oftentimes when we lose elections, we think that we lost people to Trump. And that is true in circumstances, but they don't look enough at the fact that we also lost people to the couch.
Honesty, that's what we're getting from some Dems as they begin to wrap their heads around their historic thumping at the hands of the Trump phenomenon. We hear from them in their own words.
Number two.
Pretty sure I called him a clown and a charlatan.
You stand by that?
Yeah.
Nominations flooding the news zone, and critics, skeptics, and analysts weigh in on the president's latest non-traditional selections, from RFK to, you just heard Mike Lawler talk about, Matt Gaetz, as well as Tulsi Gabbard. Dems scramble to keep up.
Number one.
But the American people have just delivered really something very amazing, the biggest political victory in 129 years. That's something. So we swept all swing states. We won the popular vote. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, there you go. The President of the United States, ebullient yesterday in Mar-a-Lago, on winning the popular vote, on winning in every battleground state, on winning in almost every state. He went on to say, I didn't win it. The people won it. Trump reflects, reacts, and basks in the glory of his remarkable historic victory as he hosts a major gala at Mar-a-Lago while getting yet another legend, Sylvester Stallone, to come out of the shadows and support his case and his candidacy. Josh Krasauer is a Fox News Radio political analyst and editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, pretty amazing what's happened in just a week and a half.
It is. It's a seismic shift in Washington. And look, I think we are already are going to have some pretty interesting confirmation showdowns between some of Donald Trump's, President-elect Trump's new nominations for the cabinet and the newly elected Senate majority, John Thune now, incoming Senate majority leader. So this is going to be sort of an interesting test of kind of executive legislative prerogatives and an interesting start to Trump's second term.
All right, so let's talk about Matt Gaetz. I mean, you heard Mike Lawler, not a fan. You see that Murkowski said couldn't believe it, doesn't think it's a serious nominee. So there's evidently a lot of Republicans that are beginning to say, I can't see this happening. Here's Senator Kevin Cramer, Cut 13.
Matt Gaetz comes to mind, and I have concerns that he can't get across the finish line, and we're going to spend a lot of political capital. I say we. A lot of people will spend a lot of political capital on something that even if they got done, you'd have to wonder if it was worth it. Mike, I have concerns about him, about the way he disrupted and really destroyed the House of Representatives for several months. What he did to a really good speaker in Kevin McCarthy and accomplished nothing except getting rid of him.
So am I. I think he's the worst pick. I have no respect for him.
Yeah, I mean, you won't find many friends that Matt Gaetz has in Washington, but one of his allies is the president-elect, and I think the question is going to be how much political capital does Trump spend on trying to push the guy he wants as attorney general through the Senate and try to put pressure on newly minted Senate Majority Leader John Thune in getting that done. I think there are enough Republicans that I'm hearing from, Republican senators, who don't want to vote for Matt Gaetz. But do they want to face the political pressure from Trump? We kind of played this game many times in the first term of the Trump administration. And look, I think Collins and Murkowski are, probably the most likely folks to vote no. But with 53 Republicans in the Senate, you need two more. And the question is, who else would kind of line up against Donald Trump? And I think that is going to be the question with both with Gaetz, but also several of the other nominations, which have been quite controversial.
Yeah, you just need simple majority, right?
The Republicans cannot afford four defections, but if you get 50-50, J.D. Vance breaks the tie. So, if anyone wants to scuttle the nominations, it would be four Republicans as long as all the Democrats were united on the same side.
So now RFK gets nominated. I knew he was going to play a role. We all knew it. But now he's HHS secretary, a nominee, and he's going to be part of the Health and Human Services and everything on down. And he's got thousands of people underneath him. He's got billions of dollars in a budget. And he's going to look to change things about the ingredients in our foods and the vaccines in our arms. Your thoughts?
This is someone who was a man of the left. I mean, this was not that long ago, one of the leading sort of progressive activists, a very, very, very outspoken vaccine skeptic. And now Trump wants him to head up the HHS, the health agency, which is not just responsible for FDA, CDC, and all the other regulatory agencies, but also the Medicare, Medicaid, and all our entitlement programs. It's another pick that's going to be a challenge to get through the Senate. But it comes down to whether Trump has the juice after winning a decisive election to really kind of push Republican senators to get in line. And he's hoping that he can kind of use his momentum and try to change the party. And the Republican Senate, led by John Thune now, is going to have to decide how much they want to be doing their role of advising and consenting, doing their job as a check against the executive branch, or whether they want to be a rubber stamp for Trump's nomination.
I'll tell you, Josh, I think that a lot will have to do is how they do literally answering the questions. They're both good on their feet. RFK's got the voice issue, But he's been studying this for a long time. No one doubts his intellect. You know, he's got this environmental portfolio that almost had him a member of the Obama administration. We know that he's very respected in Democratic circles. Some people think he's too radical. But let's see how he does. I mean, he's going to get some direct questions. And if he has good answers, I think that would earn his way through. And I saw the governor, Jared Polis, cheered his nomination. Among the people that don't think that he will do well is Sanjay Gupta. And he weighed in, cut 23 of CNN.
Well, you know, it's not often that the entire medical and public health community is going to be in lockstep on something, but they're pretty close on this in terms of their significant concerns, horror even. Somebody said to me today, I can't think of any single individual who'd be more damaging to public health than RFK.
Well, he wants to shake it up. I don't think he wants to damage health. He talks about getting people healthy again. So, you know, obviously he wasn't even given his opinion. He says that's the health and wellness community.
Yeah, look, it is interesting. You mentioned Jared Polis. And by the way, Jared Polis, I remember during the COVID mandates, he was the one Democratic governor who spoke out against his party implementing a lot of pretty draconian and overly strict rules and regulations. And he actually led the way politically for his party to kind of back away from some of that stuff. So, I mean, if that was the issue, if RFK was, you know, if the expectation was that he was going to sort of have a more maybe skeptical approach to, you know, big pharma or, you know, pharmaceutical companies, that would be one thing. I do think that you're right, Brian. The hearings are really going to be revelatory. And look, he's going to be asked about a lot of these positions, especially on vaccines, that he continues to hold that are quite controversial and many discredited within the medical and health community. So yeah. that is going to be a showdown that is going to be must-see TV if we get to the hearing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will. And the thing is, too, the president says, look, you're part of the reason why I got this job. People are not happy with what's in our food. They're finding out more and more about the processed food. We see that 75% of the country is overweight. We see that a great number of our youth are not able to, even if they got drafted, couldn't serve in the military. So a lot of it, people say, well, we're lazy. A lot of it they find out is the food. And Casey and Callie Means come out with their book. McCary has their book about what's happening with big pharma, what's happening with big food, and with farmers, how they'd be incentivized to maybe get food that is not the best for us. And if you could change that, that's why you're Donald Trump. If you want to get America healthy again, this is the type of things you do.
Yeah, look, I mean, these are well thought out concerns about the state of obesity in our country, the state of people's individual health. That said, like, this is a very unconservative way of, I mean, I remember when Michelle Obama was having all these nutritional initiatives in the Obama White House that really enraged most Republicans and conservatives because it was just too much of a role for government to do and interfere in people's individual lives. And Robert Kennedy has always been a man of the left. He has always had an active role of government in people's individual behaviors, like many on the left do. And, you know, that is sort of the philosophical – it is a little, you know, stunning to me to see some people who are conservatives and who don't want government to be involved in a lot of people's individual lives and decision-making, and they think they should be able to eat whatever they want or make the decisions to drink or eat whatever they want. And you have now the nominee for HHS secretary taking a very progressive, very different view on the role of government and the role of individual behavior.
So let's talk about what's happening with Israel. It turns out Iran – there's reports today that when Israel bombed back at Iran after their second missile attack, they took out portions of their nuclear program. Have you heard this? And how do you think that plays into what happens next? Because Iran promises a retaliation for the retaliation.
It's a big, big scoop. I think it was first reported in Axios that the response from Israel in attacking Iran really did damage. We knew it did damage to a lot of Iranian military facilities, but for the first time, we're now learning that it actually set back the Iranian nuclear program. So this is something that is a big deal. It's I think, good news for anyone who cares about a peace in the Middle East and about the threat that Iran poses in the region. And it's also interesting. We heard a lot of threats and posturing from Iran that they were going to strike back against Israel at some point. But now, especially after Donald Trump's election, we're not hearing that much at all. In fact, they may be backing away from those threats. So it is interesting that the Trump administration, with most of their foreign policy nominees, are very tough on Iran. They've very clear on how much of a threat they view the Iranian regime. And it is interesting to see Iran in turn kind of backing away from some of their aggressiveness in the wake of the election.
I was talking to somebody with the Israeli press last night, and they said that the election is just has them over the moon between Governor Huckabee, now Ambassador Huckabee. I'm sure he'll get confirmed. Now with Trump, we know how pro-Israel he's been, to J.D. Vance, too. And now Marco Rubio, they feel that they got some great allies, as well as Pete Hegseth. If he gets through, Pete is very pro-Israel. So they feel great that you're rid of Blinken, Jake Sullivan, and Biden, and Harris.
Yeah, well, in Israel, the Trump election has been warmly received, especially with – I mean, there was also a report today about Iran trying to send signals that they weren't trying to assassinate Donald Trump, because they know I think he's probably going to exact some retribution, and he's not going to forget those threats and those attempts made. So, I mean, Iran, when you look at the foreign policy picture and among our enemies, Iran is probably got good reason to be nervous. And it looks like they're trying to back away from some of their aggressive behavior in the region, which would be good news, even before Trump takes office.
All right, Josh, it's going to be interesting. So we got 7 nominees yesterday. Today, I bet you we get Treasury. I think that is lined up for sure, and I think it'll be Scott Bessent, unless Howard Lutnick puts himself in there, pulls a Dick Cheney, and instead of getting the best person, says, I think the best person's me. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've seen the reports. I think the odds-on favorite is still Scott Bessent. He is admired on Wall Street. I think he would be an easy confirmation. A lot of Democrats, I think, would support him. And that's one of the most important agencies. So, I mean, it is interesting that you have sort of the traditional conservative picks, your Rubios, your Mike Waltzes. I mean, I think the national security team, for the most part, is pretty much been received even from Democrats positively. And Treasury, that would be another big stamp for Donald Trump. The big question marks are HHS and the attorney general spot. And that those are the confirmation battles that are going to be fierce in the months to come.
One of the two people that I think they're under the radar that will be front and center, Lee Zeldin knocking down those regulations at EPA responsibly. And then you have Governor Burgum as Interior. We got to start some drilling. We got to get going. We got to do some more fracking. And when they'll get those energy costs down, it helps us with security. And there'll be the instant decrease for everyone at the pump. Josh Krasshauer, I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, listen, your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. I have a lot going on right now, including I'll play a little bit of the president last night. Couldn't be happier as he gets ready to take over the country once again.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There's an assumption when you're telling people you're leaving that you're going to be missed. Nobody knew you were there. Imagine being Eva Longoria or Cher or Mark Ruffalo or George Clooney and waking up to the realization that you don't matter. Not only does no one go to your movies, Clooney, they don't take you seriously either. That is, Hollywood has learned a message. A lot of people have learned the message that they're not in the majority, and that has destroyed their egos. So the metaphor isn't really about left versus right or facts versus feelings. It's inside versus out, the ego versus the outside world. Their ego was always bolstered by an outsized view of their importance, which was enhanced by identity politics. And now the world outside just punctured it, and they have to admit they're wrong, but they can't because their ego won't allow them.
Greg, as funny as he is, everyone talks about how funny it is, late night show. He's also really insightful. That is a great analogy. It is so true. We talked about that. I'll talk about that on One Nation this weekend. Just like these celebrities went all in and it didn't matter, but it cost Kamala Harris millions of dollars. Ken, listening in Texas. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how's this HHS pick gone in weakness of Trump's fast food?
Can you say that again? He's not against fast food.
No, I'm saying, how is this HHS pick with Trump going in line with Trump's weakness for fast food?
No, what I'm trying to say is that RFK Jr. is not against fast food. He wants to get the exterior, the things that preserve them out of it. And he wants to put standards involved in it, the same standards that are involved in European foods, for example. You get to a McDonald's in the UK, it's different from the McDonald's here. And he wants to even make it better. I mean, who cares what kind of oil your fries are in? Why not put oil that's beneficial to you, like that you'll get in England, as opposed to here? Steve in Florida. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Brian, great to speak to you. Two things. Number one, what do you think the chances are of Dan Bongino, who I met once in the mall in Palm Beach Gardens here, just an amazing guy, just like he is on TV. What do you think of his chances of getting elected for the head of Secret Service?
Well, not elected, you mean nominated, but I would say this. Tom Homan, in my conversation over the weekend, said we got to get Secret Service straightened out with whoever takes Homeland, because they're in it. And he said, I'd love Dan Bongino to take it. My feeling is that Dan created an empire, a communications empire, and I think for him to leave right now would be difficult. I think, you know, he would consult on it, maybe help them find the right person, but I think it would be very tough for him to leave. It's not a matter of, you know, it's hard to build this thing, especially through social media. So that might be problematic. Plus, physically being away from his family for a while after he's already done it. You know, he's already served a lot. So I don't think it's likely, but I think he would love to consult on it.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I want to thank some people that have been so instrumental in doing such a great job. We have a man who has a seriously high IQ. You know, I'm a person that believes in high IQs, and his is about as high as they get. He launched a rocket 3 weeks ago, and then he went to Pennsylvania to campaign because he considered this more important than launching rockets that cost billions of dollars. Elon Musk.
It's just so interesting to see the president. Yeah, look, think about the stress. Even if you're not the biggest fan, which, you know, I am a supporter, I know he doesn't walk on water, but if you think about what he's been through, and some of it's self-inflicted, from 2020 and January 6th to all the court cases that were thrown in his way, to going through the primary as he's doing it, by being convicted in May, and then knocking out Biden in June, getting a new opponent in July, and then walking away with every battleground state in his pocket, including 30 states overall, and improving in every ethnic background. It is one of the most remarkable stories, and anyone has to point it out, because he's got the popular vote and the electoral college win. Joe Lonsdale all over it. He's been a supporter. He's co-founder of Palantir, along with Peter Thiel and others, and founder and general partner of the firm 8VC. Joe, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be on.
Hey, Joe, you've seen President through ups and downs. He's makes a million appearances, but it's the first time I heard him talk extensively. And in this period when you're not governing, you're just assembling, you got to feel good for him, right?
It feels really good. Listen, I think, Brian, a lot of people in America feel like a weight's been lifted off their shoulders. There's a civilizational direction we're going to go in now. It's going to be bold, and it's going to be exciting. And, man, they're getting so much work done already. They're working hard. I think a lot of people assume, oh, I'll come back to you in January when they're going to get going. No, they're getting going now, and they're working.
So, Joe, for people listening right now who don't see it that way, what do you tell them?
You know, we have some of our smartest and boldest friends, as Trump was just talking about right there. He said some really high IQ people who want to go in and who want to fix things. And listen, Brian, you know, the way that SpaceX and Palantir operate, the way that our very best companies in our country operate, has really changed a lot over the last couple of generations. There's all sorts of lessons learned. There's all sorts of the pace and speed at which we do things right. I mean, I think Tesla here, when they moved to Austin, they built the biggest manufacturing plant in the world in 18 months. Like, there's a whole nother level versus anything even close to what the government knows how to do. And meanwhile, the government is just like grown with like so many new regulations, so much waste, like hundreds of thousands of comically broken things. And people don't realize, you know, I think a lot of people around D.C., there's a level of arrogance, like, this is how we do things. We're in charge. It doesn't really matter who the president is. We're going to keep doing it this way. And I don't think they realize what's coming, because these people, a lot of my smartest friends have gone in, and they are going to figure out like thousands of things to do as fast as possible to cut and change and fix how D.C. works.
And that's what Vivek and Elon are going to do with their both efficiencies are, as I guess you would call them. So would you play a role in that? Would you also consult on that?
Well, I'll definitely be consulting and helping and doing what I can to send in people. Because, I mean, listen, all of us who deal with these regulations, we see thousands of things that make no sense. This is not about what helps my company or your company or that. It's what helps everyone. Just because, I mean, listen, there's like a million rules at the federal level, and a lot of it everyone knows is nonsense. And I mean, there's this list you can go online and see of like comically stupid spending. But I think more point is like what's the process through which to run these things? What's the way in which to map out everything and to push back? You know, if I was a bureaucrat working in D.C. and I felt I was smart and knew what's going on, I'd be mapping out things in my department ready to show the new administration, because they're going to be looking for everything, every little thing to get rid of any nonsense.
You know, what's interesting, Joe, is that we heard unofficially that about 20% of Silicon Valley voted for Trump. Maybe that was 2% in 2016. And now the new AI generation, the AI companies, are more open to a more libertarian view or a more conservative view. I know San Francisco isn't exactly going to turn red, but have you noticed a change?
Yeah, you know, one thing that happened, Brian, over the last decade is a lot more of our companies start trying to fix areas of the economy that matter to the populace where the government's broken things. And so as more companies go into healthcare, as more companies go into defense, as more companies, you know, deal with therapies and deal with all sorts of areas, and manufacturing, of course, is a big thing coming back. And there's all these reasons why that stuff doesn't work, because of stupid government stuff that's accidentally broken things, right? Because of thousands of rules that actually hurt us and end up causing more pollution because they forced China to do it instead of us. And so what you see is a lot of the leaders in Silicon Valley have looked and they're seeing all these broken things. They say, wait a second, that's wrong. And they're realizing, wait a second, we were voting for the left before, but all these people on the left are against us and they want to keep all these dumb rules. Okay, we need to disrupt this. And so a lot of leaders really woke up in the last several years. And then on top of that, of course, you have this kind of lack of merit in the government tied to nonsense, tied to you know, putting DEI or whatever it was over accountability, over just bringing the best and brightest in. So you have had a lot of my friends, and you know, most of them still don't speak up. Most of them are still quiet, but a lot more of them are speaking up, a lot more of them are donating. And I get hundreds of notes from people in Silicon Valley. Thank you for saying something. Thank you for speaking up. I can't do it in my company, but I really appreciate you doing that.
See, it was so interesting, too, because Joe Rogan said something similar when he said at the last minute, I'm going to endorse Trump. He said so many people, because he was in Los Angeles for the longest time, in the Hollywood community wrote him and go, congratulate. I'm so glad you did this, had the courage to speak up. I was going to vote. I voted a certain way, but you spoke up for us. And I think this could be a difference. It's up to Trump to produce. But let me ask you something. Simpson Bowles comes out and they study this thing for 2 years. They pay all this money. And it talked about how to get government spending under control. Obama looked at it and said, this will never pass, never looked at it again. Have you guys looked at that and said, well, you know, they got some good points here. This reform is something to build on. Have you thought about that? I mean, because as much as you know about business and as great as your success is, maybe you just don't know the inner workings of government yet that might help you to ramp up quickly.
That was true 10 or 20 years ago. I'm going to push back on that, Brian. I've started three multi-billion-dollar defense companies. I sold a company this year called OpenGov that powers 3,000 governments for $1.8 trillion.
What did you say? What was that last thing you did?
So I sold OpenGov. I started it 14 years ago. We power 3,000 different government groups in the country. So, you know, whether cities, state agencies, different things going on. And meanwhile, I've worked a lot with the Defense Department. Palantir has worked all over the government. So one thing that's different today, and this is true for Elon as well, he has worked with lots of government departments. One thing that's different today than maybe 20 years ago is actually I do know the government. I've been working with it for 20 years. People like Elon have been working with it for 20 years. And so there used to be this thing where, oh, you guys aren't from our world. You don't really know how it works. Actually, no. We know how it works, and we have our friends who have way higher IQs, and they are ready to fight like hell because this thing needs to be confronted and fixed. And it's not just about, yes, there's legislation to pass. There is a lot you could do with executive orders. There is a lot you could do with the unitary power of the President of the United States. And there's and with the Supreme Court on our side as well. And, you know, and the biggest thing is the transition is about getting the people who will be bold. So if you see who's being hired in the transition, then Elon's not just there to do Doge. Right, he's not just there to do what he's doing. He's there along with others to make sure and be helpful that the people coming in, the secretaries, know their job is to execute on these things, is to execute like hell on these efficiency things. And so I think it's a mistake to think DOGE is like separate thing or confused or might try to pass like recommendations. And this is about taking thousands of actions on day one
and then thousands more, you know, right after that. So I think people are going to be surprised what comes out of this. Is he's not the kind of guy just to sit around and recommend legislation. He's the kind of guy who's like, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to do it right away.
All right. Fantastic. I love being corrected. I'm excited about that. So, Joe, let me ask you, when it comes to executive orders, could you let our listeners know what you had in mind, what you were thinking, just in, fundamentally? What could you recommend to Trump?
Yeah, well, I can't speak for the inside baseball too much. That's for them to tell you. But what I will tell you is there's a lot of ways in which you can force transparency right away. There's a lot of ways in which you can make people come back to work. There's a lot of ways in which we can move people around if necessary. You know, there's a lot of ways in which you can make people justify if they're going to get payments from the government. Like, there's tens of thousands of NGOs right now that our government is, and a lot of it seems to be corrupt. A lot of it seems to be political patronage. You can map all of that out. You can force all of that to justify itself, and you can find ways to turn huge amounts off. This is, you know, I think Elon Musk said $2 trillion. I think that's a little bit high in my view, but they're going to go big. You know, they're going to go big.
All right. That's great. Do you think Trump is for this? Do you think he understands the scope in which could be done? And do you think he's willing to let you guys go to town?
Well, you know, it's not me who's in charge, but it's President Trump who's in charge. I think that's the whole point. I think it's actually very good for the country that in some ways, the way it's ended up working with President Trump where he was in. He got stymied a lot of things. It only took 2 years to get their bearings. He got unfairly attacked for a long time, had to deal with all sorts of nonsense. Then he went out of power. The last president, the Biden administration, actually turned off the part of the IRS site where you see all the grants to NGOs, where you see a lot of the data because they're getting away with so much to their allies, right? Let's be clear. Like, Kamala Harris's brother-in-law created the new way at the DOJ a decade ago to give tens of billions of dollars in settlements to these NGOs. I mean, there's so much grift that just increased massively the last 4 years, and everyone around Trump has seen it. And they're like, what the heck? This is crazy. This is wrong. And he's come back in, and I think he's ready to go to war. I think he's done with the nonsense. He's learned how it works. His people learned how it works. I think the quality of the people coming in this time is not only much higher than last time, but they are all at war. Like last time, Brian, there were people who were running different departments who didn't want to be controversial in the press, didn't want to turn off the nonsense DEI because they might get attacked and get a bad article about them. This time, no one cares about bad articles. This time, they're going all out. So it's going to be really fun, and it's going to be a lot more bold than last time.
I love it because you know what? You're not looking to get rich. You're just looking to make the country better. And I think people understand that approach.
We're going to fix a hell of a lot of things.
Right. So, Joe, tell me about what you think. I don't know if you know Pete Hegseth, but he's got a great shot.
Yeah, I like him.
All right, great. So
I like him. No, let me tell you what we need in the Department of Defense, because this is like one of the most critical things. You know, I've built a few big defense companies, and you know, the legacy defense companies are ripping off our nation. But more than that, like, you need someone who's a warrior. You need someone who's courageous. You need someone who's obviously smart. You know, went to Princeton and Harvard. I don't think you want someone from the business background as much. This is not all about cronyism. It's just about what's best for the country. And you want someone who's willing to stand up and disrupt. And he's going to have people around him who have all sorts of different types of experience. But, I mean, the Defense Department right now operates like a communist entity. It's like only Cuba and DOD are still commie top-down things. There's so much to do to put in competition to clean things up. I'll tell you one thing, Brian. You know, in 1940, when we're getting ready to go into World War II, we hired some really amazing people to come in and look at the generals and say, wait a second, hundreds of these guys, they're too old, they're too crony, they're out of shape, they're just not the best and brightest. And they ended up cleaning out a bunch, making way for young people. That's why we got Eisenhower going to the top. That's why we got General Patton going to the top, is we cleaned a lot of these things out. And similarly today, you get a lot of politicians who went along with DEI and other nonsense and who were not focused on what's really best for the country. They're focused on what's best for their career and virtue signaling. And so I think you're going to have a lot of changes. And you need someone who's willing to be bold and do that. So I think he's the kind of guy you want.
See, the other thing, too, they have this program where they're going to get some retired guys to look at these four-star generals and find out who's wasting time and who's just there for political purposes. You know, the General Milley's of the world, 100 pounds overweight, who just likes to talk in theory and not take responsibility and actually work behind people's back. So they want to identify that. Are you for that?
You know, I'm 100% for bringing people in to help identify, figure out what we need. You know, I'd love to actually give more responsibility to the commands. I'd love to give them some of the budget and hold them accountable. I'd love to have more bold things where actually we have these guys actually in charge of a lot more and then being held accountable. And the only requirement is winning. Right. And so I think there's ways in which we can increase merit, and then along with increasing merit, increase the responsibility, increase the accountability. I think we should pay him more too when we get the best ones. I think it's ridiculous how little they're paid versus the giant budgets they're running on. That's not up to me. That's not up to me. But you know, there's things like this I think we should be looking at.
What are you working on now?
You know, I'm running my firm AVC. We've built some of the most important defense and healthcare companies, and AI is unlocking so much, Brian. I'll tell you what, it's really clear that we can deliver healthcare in this country for much, much, much less cost. We deliver better defense. You know, it's like totally outdoes the last generation if you allow us to, if you get rid of the regulations in the way. So, you know, I'm working on building the companies, and I'm really hoping that the whole new wave of hundreds of these AI companies that are going to raise productivity are not taken down by stupid laws in states and governments and not slowed down by the legacy companies trying to stop us. So that's going to be a big battle in the tech world, the small guys versus the big guys.
In what respect are you for guardrails when it comes to AI?
You know, I think we should have tort law. I think we should have very clear rules on transparency on what you're doing with people's data. And I think it should be, people should know what's going on. You shouldn't trick them. But you know, you shouldn't be able to make, you know, abuse material or illegal, you know, pictures of people attacking them, pretending they did something they didn't do. So there's some guard rules there, but I'll tell you what, right now, even in our red states around the country, there's all sorts of laws going forward that were sponsored by the Biden group, by Bill Gates, by Mark Zuckerberg's Chan Zuckerberg initiative. There's all sorts of these crazy AI safety things they call themselves, drawing up laws. And they're trying to convince states all around the country to pass these laws, and these are terrible. There's a really core battle in tech on, do we accelerate or do we regulate and be super careful? And I vote for accelerate. I vote for a brighter American future. I vote for the golden age. And I'm trying to stop a lot of the really dumb laws people are trying to put in place.
So I just remember Elon Musk coming out and Altman coming out saying, guys, this is great, but it's scary. You don't feel that way.
You know, the part of it that's scary, Brian, AI is, at the end of the day, for a lot of tech guys, a lot of them are secular, you know. So a lot of them, this is like their religion, where it's going to be this new form of God that totally changes everything at some point in the coming decades. And I think that's a little bit silly, but I do think there's some ways in which AI could actually be something that's like, that is a new form of super intelligence at some point. The laws we're talking about right now aren't about that, and they're not going to stop that. The laws we're talking about right now are, can big companies use regulation to slow down disruption? And so the big companies and the left is using the excuse of this like longer term scary religious question of whether or not we're creating a god to put in all sorts of just dumb regulation that's going to break productivity, and I'm against that.
All right. Hopefully Trump listens to you. Joe Lonsdale, thanks. I'm inspired talking to you. I'm pumped up. I think my audience feels the same way. Go get
it,
Joe.
It's a great time, Brian. We're excited. We got a big couple of years coming for America.
All right. Great. Joe Lonsdale, all pumped up. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm sure I called him a clown and a charlatan.
You stand by that?
Yeah.
One quick question. Should a clown and a charlatan run the Justice Department?
Look, obviously, the president has every right to nominate who he chooses. There will be a confirmation process. We'll let that process play it out.
Yeah, that was, Mike Lowe. A lot of people think that he really hurt the country a year ago. That even if you're not a Kevin McCarthy fan, which, by the way, I am, he worked hard to get that spot, majority leader. You know, Paul Ryan steps aside, holds on to the spot, and then he comes in as minority leader and then ascends to speaker. But with a one vote of a right to vacate, he steps up and then he has no plan to fill the spot. No one can do it. Embarrasses the country. Everything stops on Capitol Hill to the point where Democrats were saying, this is ridiculous. Remember all those votes? We look like a tin pot dictatorship, actually democracy, you know, something you might see in Haiti or some developing nation in Eastern Europe. Dell, you're in Massachusetts.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing today?
Good. What's your thoughts about Matt Gaetz?
My thought is this is a brilliant strategy by Trump. Matt Gaetz has been nothing but a sore in the rear of the Republican House for a long, long time. He has that ethics report coming out. I think by nominating him, he quickly resigned his position, which gets him out of the House. And then Trump is not going to expend too much capital trying to get him through the Senate and give up on him quickly and then actually put in who he wants.
Let's see, Del. It just seemed to be something that they thought of in the car, and they didn't even tell Susan Wiles. So no one, everyone seemed to be blindsided by it. But we'll see. Del, you might be right. We'll play back your call, I promise, if that happens to be the case.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. Thanks so much for listening all week long. We're watching nominee after nominee be coming forward for the President of the United States, some of which can need confirmation. Others like Michael Waltz will just step in. Yesterday we found out a bit of a surprise. Interior Secretary is Governor Doug Burgum. Not that he got the job, but he kind of just brought up during the president's America First rally. Yes, not America First rally, but as part of their institute. He was down there speaking at Mar-a-Lago. They had a big meeting. Sylvester Stallone. It was a lot of fun, reportedly. And the president's first time speaking openly about, he let the press in, about his historic win. And it's amazing that even his critics are having a hard time going off, but they're going off instead on him. They're going off on his nominees, whether it's RFK, whether it's Matt Gaetz, or whether it's Pete Hegseth. They are anything but typical nominees, and people are going to town on them, and we'll discuss that this hour with Kennedy, and of course, Shannon Bream is standing by now, anchor of Fox News Sunday, Fox News chief legal correspondent. Shannon, welcome back.
It is great to be with you, Brian. I count down the seconds to our Friday chat every week.
Right, because you can't wait to find out what's on One Nation.
Exactly. I'm like, what's happening on Saturday night? So I have it for show prep on Sunday. I need to know.
Right. So get your pen handy or pencil.
Okay, I'm ready.
It is going to be my A block is going to be Jim Jordan, and we're going to be followed by Newt Gingrich, who was just called out yesterday by the President of the United States. And then I want to go historically talk about – keep tight. You mean when me slow down?
No. I type very quickly.
Okay,
so I feel like I've got you so far.
And then I'm going to have Mike LaRosa on as well as Mark Penn. I want to talk about the Democratic strategy, where they go from here, how they feel about these revelations of the millions of dollars to Al Sharpton, to his foundation and Oprah Winfrey's expenses.
Yeah.
How much is going to be exposed from Willie Nelson? How much is going to be exposed from Beyonce? And, you know, all these others.
And it didn't work. That's the thing.
That's key.
You spent $1 billion.
And they're in debt.
It didn't work.
Yeah. And where they go from here. I mean, I don't know if you read David Brooks today. He just says, can we finally step back and realize why the Democrats lost? And mm-hmm. we're done with the identity politics. Shannon mm-hmm. Bream, the candidates want your vote. They don't need to put you in a category of Hispanic, Black, transgender. It has to be in the civil rights, equal rights, gay rights. And they said way too much categorization, and people just want what's good for their family.
Right, and you saw that cut across all those different lines that you mentioned. I mean, when Democrats are like, wait a minute, how come we're losing ground with some of these traditional Democrat voting blocks, you know, different race groups and income groups and that kind of thing. But you're right, these topics cut across all those things. And I think that there's a point where the average American is sort of like, why are we naming this person because they have these characteristics instead of this person's best qualified for the job? That stuff factors into their personal lives too. And these are people who are not racist or bigots. They're like, okay, if it is, you know, Black woman who's LGBTQ, whatever, she's got the best qualifications, best resume, great, hire her. I think that they got really tired of feeling like that person, whatever the categories that you want to line up or identities that you want to line up, are going to get any kind of special preference for any kind of thing. It just didn't line up with, you know, paying for groceries and gas and making sure your kids are safe.
Right, but it's amazing. You know, polling's done. I don't know if technology is going to be able to keep up with it, because got to get inside the chips in our heads that Elon Musk hasn't given us yet.
Because I refuse.
Yeah.
For the record.
And that's why, oh, it's too close to call. Really? Because you can't figure it out. Let's be honest. So we know about Tom Homan being, you know, in there, and everyone expected it, and having Marco Rubio as Secretary of State and Mike Waltz as National Security Advisor. These are traditional, no surprise, got it, check the box. A lot of people are talking about RFK, mm-hmm. and they don't think he should be head of Health and Human Services. Here is what Donald Trump said yesterday. Cut five.
Another one who's another great mind and a great guy and so popular. And I think he's right. He wants to make people healthy. It's driven him pretty wild over the last number of years. Today, I nominated him for I guess if you like health and if you like people that live a long time, it's the most important position. RFK Jr. Bobby.
And right away, the New York Post has an editorial against him. Says they talked to him. We sat down with RFK back in May when he was still challenging Biden for the nomination. The insights we were impressed with had nothing to do with health. When it came to his topic, his views were a head-scratching spaghetti of what we can only call warped conspiracy theories, not just on vaccine. He told us with full conviction that all America's chronic health problems began in 1 year in the 1980s when a dozen bad things happened. So the New York Post, not on board. The governor of Colorado, Democrat, is on board. Shannon, this is going to be an interesting debate.
It is. And it feels like with a lot of these picks that President-elect Trump is throwing out there, it's a real challenge to not only, you know, Democrats, of course, but to his own party, because he's coming in with what he feels like is a really strong mandate, a strong popular vote, you know, margins above what he had in 2016 and 2020 with all these different groups. They have the trifecta of now having the Senate and House, and he wants to spend some political capital, but there's a limit to that. And when you have senators from your own party coming out to say, whoa, 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 let's just wait a minute. This person will have a process. They will go through the process. That kind of code for, I'm not sure I'm going to vote for this person. But remember, of course, we've talked about this endlessly. President Trump put all those people running for Senate GOP leadership on the spot. Like, how do you feel about recess appointments? And really got all of them to say, all right, it's all on the table. That's what John Thune said with our Brett Baer last night. It's all on the table. Because some of these people you pictured, that would absolutely be maybe the only scenario in which they would get approved. And I think RFK Jr. is one of those that people appreciate him. I think he got a lot of suburban moms and people who worry about the health of their kids and food and the food supply. I think he did bring a lot of them over to take a look at President Trump and vote for him. But whether he can get through Senate confirmation is a different story.
So then you have Matt Gaetz, who I think is a terrible move. Senator John Cornyn, you have Kevin Cramer seems to be against it. Mike Lawler not voting on it, House side, but says terrible person. You have Murkowski saying doesn't seem to be serious. Other people say, like Joni Ernst, he's going to have his work cut out for him. Here's Senator John Cornyn yesterday, cut 14.
How critical is it to have access to what the House Ethics Committee has found in their investigation?
I think there should not be any limitation on the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation, including whatever the House Ethics Committee has generated.
So you want to see it?
Absolutely.
So he wants to see the ethics committee report. Tell us legally, does he have a right to see that, Shannon?
Well, I mean, it will be very interesting to see if one side of the Hill decides to subpoena the other side of the Hill, because, you know, these committees do have subpoena power, and how hard that the House Ethics Committee would fight them on that. Because, you know, House Ethics Committee rightly says, if, you know, somebody's not a House member anymore, we don't have jurisdiction over this. But there's been something prepared. There have been interviews. There have been, you know, a compilation of things that they've put together that they would consider evidence. And listen, maybe the ethics committee was going to clear them. We have no idea. But I guarantee you that there will be a really hard push on the Senate side to get their hands on it, not just from Democrats, but from Republicans.
Todd Blanche as deputy attorney general. What do you think of that?
Listen, I think President Trump wants people who were loyal to him, and that definitely has been Todd Blanche. And I think he wants people who've had to fight some of these fights to now be running portions of the agencies that President Trump said were after him. So not surprising that he would choose a lot of his personal attorneys who fought these fights from the other side to now flip and join the other side, possibly.
So we have this window where Democrats are being honest. And Republicans, too. This is why we won. This is why we lost. And then they're going to go into their own corners in order to build their party and do well in the midterms. One person that came out and said this is Richie Torres. I want you to hear what the Democratic congressman from New York said. Cut 35.
But when you zoom in, there is cause for concern, right? Not only did Donald Trump crack the blue wall in the industrial Midwest, but he's beginning to crack the blue wall, the ultimate blue wall, in urban America. He came within 5 points of winning New Jersey. He came within 12 points of winning New York. One in three New Yorkers in New York City voted for Donald Trump. In 2012, Barack Obama won 96% of the vote in the South Bronx. In 2024, Donald Trump won nearly 30%, a more than 20-point swing. And so we no longer live in a world where the Latino vote can be taken for granted.
And he tried. You know, the thing is, Shannon, he tried. He had the barbershop meetings. He had the rally. Right. And he stayed in New York for a long time because they kept him there with these courts. Mm-hmm. So
he made the most of it.
So what do you think of that? I mean, can you believe the way he listened to a New York congressman say this?
Yeah. I mean, and he has been one of those voices of truth that has been willing to go out there and say, like, listen, some of this crazy stuff that, you know, we've pledged our allegiance to does not resonate with the American people. And we got to admit that. And you make such a good point. President Trump was there for the Stormy Daniels hush money trial, but he did make the best of it, doing stops in New York, doing things where people are like, this is a waste of your time. This is, you know, Madison Square Gardens, that's a waste of your time. And to see how numbers shifted in these really deeply traditionally blue places, if I'm a Democrat, that scares me. I've got to be asking questions about how do we tranche that? How do we stop that bleeding, mm-hmm. understand it, and can we turn it around before 26, 28, and the like?
Right. And then you saw Mar-a-Lago, the celebration there, and how they make the most of it with the window that they have. And when this first time we've had a president win who can't get reelected. So what is that mm-hmm. going to be like to know that no reelection super PAC? You know, I just got to do well in the midterms. Keep my power, keep my house, keep my Senate. But besides that, it is really running through the tape. And mm-hmm. he's not Barack Obama's age in the second term. He's 78. So mm-hmm. we'll see what he wants to get done. I want you to hear what Charlemagne the God, it's almost as if he hasn't been doing this like we have been doing it. He was seemed shocked that Joe Biden could sit there all smiles with Donald Trump after the things that he said. Cut 36.
Mm-hmm. What happened to the threat of democracy talk? What happened to the fascist talk? By the way, I know I've said those things about Trump as well, but I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about his political opponents like President Biden. When they say it, it holds way more weight than me. I'm just trying to figure out how do you go from he's an existential threat to democracy. So welcome back.
That's what a lot of people are saying. Maybe they didn't mean it. Maybe he just wanted to make sure he won. That's basically what you could tell. We knew that he was not. They go, when he gets in there, elections are over. I can't tell you how many times I heard that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and exactly. And we have been talking about this, like you said, for a long time. I had Senator Mark Kelly on that last Sunday before the election, and we talked about all this language, you know, existential threat to the country and democracy and Hitler and everything else. And I said, so will you, if he wins, certify the elections? When it comes time to certify the electoral counts. And he's like, well, absolutely I will. So the question is he really the existential threat to the country that you say that he is? Or is this campaign hype and now everybody can kind of calm down and move on? I mean, for a lot of people out there in this country, they believe those things. They are frightened now. And those are real people and emotions and lives that you're dealing with. So even if you were saying it for campaign purposes, they've taken it to heart and they're actually very scared at this moment because of that rhetoric.
Right. Have you formulated your guest list yet?
I have. I'm not going to tell you who my Democrat is who just canceled on me on Friday morning because I don't role like that, but we are busy replacing that person. But we do have the speaker with us, and we're going to talk about their priorities. All these people that President Trump is taking out of the House, how do they operate through that in the special elections, and how do they get things done?
Okay,
I'm going to ask him too if he thinks that House Ethics Committee, easy for me to say, if there's any chance that report releases.
Right, I just think that the subplot that's going on this week. Mm-hmm. That with all the attacks on Trump and his picks, not a lot, but there were attacks on Trump and his picks, governors forming a resistance movement, not a word right. really from the president, former president. Mm-hmm. First time I can remember in 8 years that there's attacks on him and he just is looking the other way. And I think it's a great sign.
We'll see how long it lasts. Hey, I will see you Saturday night for my show prep.
Can't wait. Go get him, Shannon.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. So when we come back, we'll take some calls and then we'll welcome in Kennedy. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you get deported, would you regret your support to Donald Trump?
No me arrepentiría.
He's saying that he wouldn't regret supporting Donald Trump. So you're really not thinking about yourself. You're thinking about your children and the future of your children.
Yes, I want the better for my children.
Do you have a plan in case you get deported?
I respect that decision. I leave the country. I'm not coming back.
So he's saying is, I guess his kids live here. They were born here, but he came here illegally. So the kids get to stay and he'll be sent back. And that's what Tom Homan said. You're going to have an option. You're going to have, you want to stay or do you want the whole family to go back? So I don't think they're going to get to him for a while because, sadly, we have a lot of criminals to get to. We have people who overstayed their visas to get to, people that haven't showed up at desk appearances to get to. So I think there's going to be, between the criminals, the people on the terror watch list, I think that there'll those people who, by the time we get there, 2 years in, I think there might be something not necessarily offered. There might be a pathway that's a little less direct than setting up into temporary camps and then shipping out as soon as your plane, as soon as your seat on the plane is ready. That's what I think. But isn't that amazing? An illegal immigrant through a translator says, "I understand people. I vote for Trump, but even through a translator saying that I respect it and I respect the country. I leave as long as my kids have a better opportunity." For those people, I'm wondering if this, they could have gotten, if I'm, I don't know this guy, but I'm wondering if there was a place to apply for a work visa where you can come in, have a job, have relative check-in, see how he's performing, see the company if they still need him, see if he's not having, taking a job away from an American, if there might be something. And if, I love the idea of E-Verify. Hey, whether you're in a meatpacking situation, whether it's a restaurant situation, if you want to get paid, you got to go through E-Verify. We're not going to give you a Social Security number if you don't belong here. I'd love that. And that'll be a way to so-called self-deport. That's what Tom Homan said, something that Mitt Romney got in trouble for. But I understood it then. I understand it now. When you understand your options are limited, when you understand that you're never going to be able to go through the system and be accepted, and there's going to be no more sanctuary city, and E-Verify will stop you from going through the payroll system, and companies are going to be severely fined if they're using illegal immigrants, it'll put so much pressure that you're going to begin not to see this as opportunity, and you're going to go back and do it the right way. And that's what he means when he says self-deport. But if you think that because Trump won the election, we at Fox, or you at home, or the president thinks any less about illegal immigrants and they're the ones that came here are criminals, then you're not watching our channel. Because right now, you'll see in Lake and Riley, who was brutally murdered by an illegal immigrant, who's sitting there in a plaid shirt, who came here illegally, waited, plotted, and planned, got his gloves on, and just jumped her and killed her, even though she scrambled for her life as she jogged in Georgia. If you think for a second that issue doesn't matter, it's only for election purposes, you don't have cable, you're not watching our channel, and you're not watching on the stream, because it is brutal. This killer, suspected killer, we know he is, though, and his brother are criminals, and brother's committing crimes here already. This guy's a murderer, and he said, "I don't want a jury trial. Go right to the judge." Well, this is unbelievable. They got him. They got the DNA. They got everything. They got his gloves. They got everything. They got his fingerprints. They got his location. So he's done. Sadly, we got to pay for him to stay in prison the rest of his life. Even we have to pay for him to have him killed. Then you go through all the gymnastics of going through our court system. It's a shame, but at least justice is being brought. Kennedy's next. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Bad news. Kennedy just started right away with some bad news. She says, "I don't even ask how I am." But you asked, you just said, "I can only do one segment because you're on outnumbered." Number one, bragging. I have another show. Well, it's good. I'll have you for one segment. That'll be good.
That's all we have, Brian.
Right.
The moments that we've got.
Do you wish President Trump would pick up the pace a little with his nominees?
Yeah, why is he taking so long? Like, this is embarrassing.
Seven yesterday. I know. Right. So Howard Lutnick evidently is doing his Dick Cheney impersonation. Yeah. I looked at all the Treasury secretaries.
I'm going to help you find a Treasury secretary. How about that?
How about
Mr. President?
Me?
You know, we found one guy. He's rich. He doesn't need the money. He'll do a bang-up job.
Right.
He's run a massive business. He gets it. He understands the economy inside and out.
So who are you talking about? Who do you mean?
Oh, not Wilbur Ross? No. Steve Mnuchin? No, no, we've been to that rodeo. We're getting some new players on the bull, sir.
Here's a hint. Lutnick. Sounds like Lutnick.
Sounds like Sputnik.
Well, yeah, so he's going to pick himself. But I talked to Scott Bessent yesterday. I'm sure no one knows him, but you should. South Carolina guy, self-made multimillionaire.
He's been
tight with Trump
yeah,
for a while. They've been
angling
meeting.
For that job. And then There's Howard no Lutnick was like, yeah, I think I'd rather have it.
Interesting.
Frankly.
Right. I mean, number one, if you're experienced headhunter, sometimes you like. Never mind.
Wow, Brian.
I hope he goes with Scott Bessent. Okay. Talking to him yesterday, I think it would be a little crazy. There's plenty of jobs for him to do. You don't have to be Treasury
Secretary.
Yeah,
it'd be really off brand for President Trump to make a crazy pick right now.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of a bit of a surprise. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I knew he was going to have a big role. I thought it was going to be czarish, so we wouldn't have to go
Me
through
too.
Any type
more
of Senate comprehensive.
Advisory.
Right.
Which would be great because he's the kind of
HHS
guy
secretary.
Who likes to sort of flit in and out of scenarios and do some helping and then leave for a little while and come back and do some more helping. That has been RFK's modus operandi.
Not really a full-time job guy.
Not a full-time job guy.
Wants to make his own schedule.
He does. He likes being on the move.
But Jillian Michaels, extremely happy about it. Cut 25.
I'm overjoyed. I have so much to say, but I'll just wait for you to hit me with all the questions. I'm ecstatic. Trump delivered on his promise. I could not be happier and more grateful about this.
Yeah,
and all the Democrats can thank us later.
So she's talking about straight down food. Food, vaccines, a lot, but mostly talk about FDA regulations and things to that nature.
Why not put him in charge of the FDA?
Right.
I would.
Right. He says he figures, what do you want? He kept saying HHS secretary. He says, like, let me do that.
And I think it's a bigger job than.
So you're disappointed with him.
I'm not entirely appointed with it. I'm more disappointed than appointed.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's what Sanjay Gupta said. And he says this is
and not for the reason that people on the left are really mad about it.
Well, what, just because he's not an organized guy, he has no history of running a big organization.
Yeah, but I don't have a problem with the anti-establishment people in there, and I really don't have a problem with people who have natural disdain for the things that they'll be running. I don't know that he's going to limit the scope of government, and that is my wish.
Here's Dr. Sanjay Gupta, cut 23.
Well, you know, it's not often that the entire medical and public health community is going to be in lockstep on something, but they're pretty close on this in terms of their significant concerns, horror even. Somebody said to me today, I can't think of any single individual who'd be more damaging to public health than RFK.
That's pretty bad, according to Sanjay Gupta's
friends. Sanjay Gupta can shut it. All of these people who deified Anthony Fauci, they do not have a say in this. I don't care if you're a physician. If you didn't see the harm that Fauci was doing in real time,
yep,
you can shut your pie hole. It doesn't mean that because RFK Jr. was pushing back on Fauci that he's good, but Fauci was the devil.
Right, and I still think he is.
Yeah.
And they're going to get to the bottom of that because I think chairman of the Committee on Investigations is going to be Rand Paul. So he's going to go off. 73% of American food supply is made up of ultra-processed foods like chips, candy bars, and sodas. Those food companies make up 60% of the typical adult's diet and 66% of the typical kid's diet. These are the things he wants to do in a wide scope. So maybe he becomes secretary for a while, maybe scales it back once he puts things on the right track. But I'm just encouraged.
What does that mean, puts things on the right track? Like, if we are being lied to about additives.
Right.
In our food supply, if we're being lied to, and if there is like a massive effort to toxify and pollute our food and water supply, that's one thing. But the government determining what people are going to eat, that's a very slippery slope. Then you're in Michelle Obama territory. That's where I start to have an issue with this. Even though there are good intentions.
How about ingredients in food? How about like, for example, if you they keep on using Fruit Loops as an example, mm-hmm, but if you're having Fruit Loops, you're not eating healthy. There's nothing you could do with Fruit Loops.
Yeah. Well, if you're sedentary, it's even worse. But
yes,
being sedentary is worse than eating Fruit Loops. And actually, there are a lot of cereals that are really good for you that have fiber and vitamins added and things that kids would not interface with.
You like Fruit Loops better than Apple Jacks?
I can't have either because I have celiac, but when I was eating those things, I preferred Apple Jacks.
Right.
Because I love cinnamon deliciousness.
I love what it does to milk. It makes milk.
Yes,
tolerable.
Cinnamony.
Right.
Oh, it's right. Great.
So the other thing.
Miss it.
I mean, I would love to just to qualify these ingredients, go over.
I probably had a gallon of red dye number 6 every day when I was a child.
Right. If you eat anything blue, just know that's most likely not natural because we don't grow anything blue.
What about blue curacao? Because I do consume that on a fairly regular basis.
That's made from the people that give you tequila?
No, it's a liqueur. It's a blue liqueur.
It runs on its own?
It's what you put in a blue Hawaiian. I wouldn't drink it on its own. I'd feel like I would have it over ice with a straw. But it adds great color to drinks like blue Hawaiian.
Just know you've given up the natural. You know, when you're at a Red Bull or Mountain Dew.
You can add a little blue curacao to Red Bull to make it blue, but I would also add blueberry vodka.
Governor Jared Polis says, I'm excited by the news. Democrat, by the way. President-elect will appoint Robert Kennedy. He helped us defeat vaccine mandates in Colorado and will help make America healthy again by shaking up the HHS and FDA. I hope he leans into personal choice on vaccines rather than bans.
And personal choice on food.
Yeah.
Rather than bans. Don't ban food. The government cannot require people to eat certain things.
Do you think this can ripple?
That is a violation of a fundamental natural right.
Right. Like I have to call, we don't have to call Trump to find out what's for lunch.
No, you should. Remember when Michelle Obama got her hands in the food lunch program there was like 90% of it was thrown away?
So how do you feel about this? They were talking about with food stamps, looking at some of the more healthy foods, and saying, you know, let's not give people food stamps to buy Coke and Pepsi. It's bad for you. You know, and then they go, well, that's discrimination. I want Coke and Pepsi, but it's not good for you. It's going to cost you more
in
healthcare.
One of the joys in my life.
Coke and Pepsi.
Well, I like Coke Zero.
Right. You also have a great boyfriend.
I do.
So you can't just say.
He's a Pepsi guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So could you say one of the joys of my life is having a boyfriend and Coke and Pepsi.
And drinking Coke Zero while he drinks Pepsi.
Right.
Together holding hands.
Coke Zero is no sugar or?
It's zero sugar.
Does it taste like?
It tastes like heaven. Ask Guy Benson.
Right. What is?
We're both Coke Zero fans.
What is heaven taste like?
Coke Zero.
All right.
Obviously.
Good point. But, I mean, does it taste bland without sugar?
It tastes great. I mean, it's sweet. I don't know if you realize that there are sugar substitutes. Okay, first of all, what happened on 56th Street? Did you get groped?
No.
What happened?
Do you want to hear?
Yes, obviously.
Who told you this?
All
right, so I dropped my iPads, my iPods, my earpods.
AirPods.
So phone's ringing. I'm in a bit of a rush. So I go to pick it up. It's actually Caitlin, my daughter. Okay. And I open it up and it falls.
Okay.
So I leaned over to pick it up. And Kennedy, when I tell you my pants split, not just, they split, but down the middle and down the thighs.
Whoa.
Right. I mean, it was unbelievable. And the noise.
Were these like dress pants?
They were dress pants. This is a suit that I paid. You know, you identify a swatch and they make a suit for you.
Yeah.
I guess my lunges are paying off. My ass is getting bigger, clearly.
Nicely done.
Right.
Nicely done. I aspire to that.
Right. So, what? Some people do.
No, I want a big ass. Big fan of a big ass.
Right.
Yeah.
And others are.
I do a specific booty workout.
You do?
Yes. In addition to my triathlon training.
So, I'm about to go to this Saints premiere that's on Fox Nation.
Okay.
Not the New Orleans Saints of Archie Manning and Drew Brees.
Oh, Saints. I thought it was a docuseries about the New Orleans Saints.
Right. This is much more.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
This is Joan of Arc. And John the Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
I do need a nickname if I'm going to be a saint. So Brian the, if you could help me out with that.
Brian the Mead Killer.
Right, maybe. Be kind of. I don't know if Martin Scorsese would do it.
He might.
So what's harder to get Scorsese
Director's
to do it?
Director's cut.
Or become beatified.
That's a long, much
dead.
Longer process.
You usually got to be dead.
You're going to be dead for so long.
Yeah, people are going to be like
centuries.
Judging by this sketch, my great 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 grandfather must have been
miracles.
A heck of a guy.
Like it's a process.
Right. I mean, to get you out in time to outnumbered, bit of a miracle, because we have so much in common. So I have to go. So I have to go. So I say to myself, do I go back to 48th and 6th?
Mm-hmm.
And literally
and I'm looking at my jacket. If it just was split down the back, I was just going to wear my jacket.
Sure, tied around your waist. That's every girl who's ever gotten her period in ninth grade.
Okay. Don't know if that analogy helped.
Sure it does. That's what you do. You tie your sweatshirt around your waist.
I just had ripped pants.
Okay. Well, you had brilliant. So I hope you weren't freeballing.
No.
Okay, good. That's good. You had right. some coverage.
Yes.
I thought something happened. You bent over and someone groped you.
Disappointed?
It's different. It took a different turn.
So I go to Madison, mm-hmm. and I'm just trying to find a place. And I'm like, if I don't find a place, well, I might walk back. I got to go all the way back and I hope no one sees me and Fox and go, mm-hmm. what the hell just happened?
See, I turn into the Hulk.
Right.
And now I'm back to being Bruce Banner.
But I have to fight crime along the way.
Big
on the
job.
Way back, yeah.
You're hosting Fox and Friends,
fighting
3
crime.
Hours of radio, writing best-selling books, fighting crime, ripping pants.
Right. So I walked into a place, and I go, I have a blue jacket on. I go, do you have pants? And they go, yeah. Blue? They go, yeah. So I go, 32, 33 waist? They go, yeah, downstairs. So I'm waiting there with basically shorts.
Yeah.
And they come back with pants.
Did they fit?
Yeah, and I asked to wear. I go, do you mind if I wear them out?
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, you can wear them out. So they had to go to the rack and find another one and shoot it. And they, I go.
Shoot it. What does that
you know,
mean?
Like get the price.
Scan it?
Scan it.
Okay. All right.
Right.
Having trouble with our words today.
How much do you think the pants cost?
$365.
$410.
I was in the ballpark.
They go, these are rare Italian pants. How did
They're very rare because it's the only pair you will ever buy of those pants.
Yeah, the Gap. I'm looking for the Gap. The Gap wouldn't have charged me that much.
No, they wouldn't. They'd be like, these are $35 khakis on sale.
Right, and we'll pay you to wear them.
Yeah.
Because no one shops at the Gap
anymore.
And you
can wear them out.
All right,
wear them in.
What are you leading with on Outnumbered?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably Lake and Riley.
Yep.
We
were just watching this trial. It's unbelievably riveting.
I have the rundown right here that I was reading in the hallway before I entered your impressive studio. No, RFK Jr.
RFK Jr. Yeah. Yeah. RFK Jr., Pete Hegseth. I guess you could say who else is controversial?
Matt Gaetz.
No, he's no problem. He'll have no problems. He'll just sail through. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Matt Gaetz is the only one that I have a problem with. The rest, I think.
I don't have a huge problem with RFK Jr. I just want him to remember the libertarianism that he stumbled into.
But this is it, Kennedy. It's going to come out. This nomination process, if he's an inch thick and he's not, if he can't defend what he's going to do and talk about his policies, he's not going to get confirmed by Republicans.
Really?
So I would.
I don't want there to be lockstep. I think the Senate should be. But. How does Matt Gaetz get
No, I said he
confirmed?
Won't be confirmed by
Oh, now. I thought you were talking about RFK Jr.
I am.
And Matt Gaetz.
Matt Gaetz, I don't get.
Is
I just don't
get. Is he
going
to get confirmed?
I don't know
a
how he
A friend of mine who has been in this industry for a long time
votes.
Said that he's a decoy, that he's a sacrificial lamb to get him out of the House of Representatives because he's so toxic and he's going to fail and then the real nominee's going to
Well, the story was Susie Wiles didn't even know about it. They hashed it in the back of a car. And they announced it without telling her, which I think is a bad precedent if it's true, because she needs to be in on these things. Remember?
For sure.
And my statement was, when she made her statement, CNN got this report that she's one of my prerequisites was nobody from the clown car.
Yeah.
My thought was he is in the clown car.
Matt Gaetz?
Yeah.
They custom built it for him.
Thank you. So,
you're welcome.
Yeah. You are so polite today.
Well, I do try on a Friday. Maybe it's because I'm wearing this very classy dress.
Right. Which you're so lucky to be wearing a dress, you don't have to worry about ripping your pants.
No. But it's one garment, so if you rip the dress, you're kind of hosed.
Right.
But, you think you have problems right now. You really do.
I just flipped my iPad.
Your iPad and your keyboard. That's a nice iPad, too.
Was. So, Kennedy, last night, I'm in a rush leaving the screening real quick. Mm-hmm. And for the first time ever, I have my card and I'm the first one there so I can get home.
Yep.
They lose my iPad bag. So I have to stay an extra 25 minutes. They've hid it underneath some winter coat. It was incredible. A tiny closet.
What is
they
going on?
It didn't happen to Scorsese.
No. Was he there? Did you meet him?
Yeah.
Did you hug him?
He was nervous around me.
Why?
I don't know. The whole, because he knew I liked Raging Bull.
Because you're America's sweetheart?
I don't know if I'd say that. Not the sexiest man. Again, must have been runner-up. They just named, who did they name again?
John Krasinski.
Yeah.
I did a whole podcast on it yesterday.
And?
Everyone should listen.
Dreamy?
Award-winning. No! He's ordinary. See, the sexiest man alive should be sexy, not just alive.
Now you're emotional, and you got to go outnumbered. Back in a moment.
Brian Kilmeade, working up a sweat to bring you the latest news and opinion.
It's hard to look good and make sense when people are staring at your sweaty body.
Try not to stare. It's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
There's a lot of that out there. There's a lot of people that don't speak their mind. Do you know how many artists that have reached out to me that are like hippies, man? Like artists, like musicians, comedians that thanked me for endorsing Trump because they can't do it. They said they want to, but they don't want to be attacked. They can't say it. They think the country's going in the wrong direction.
So that is Joe Rogan on his podcast talking about the backlash or lack thereof for him going out and endorsing within the left-wing community. They feel the same way, but they just can't say it. I think they should stand up and do it anyway. Meanwhile, Jennifer Palmieri was asked, as senior advisor to the second gentleman, Doug Emhoff, what a prestigious position, why she didn't do the Joe Rogan podcast. They said this: there was backlash when some of our progressive staff that didn't want her to be on it, and how there would be backlash all of a sudden. He's on his heels about how his audience is going to react to this and the demands that they're going to put on him to be tough on her. He wasn't going to be tough on her. I mean, does anyone know who he is? He said, I don't want to interview her. I want to have a conversation with her. And he also said that she had some limitations that you want to talk about. I had no problem with it. And whatever it was, it turns out it was marijuana. He doesn't need to talk about that.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.